Welcome to Good Sex, Bad Sex. This is a podcast from metro.co.uk.
It's a bit like a day with a tattooist, but with more pricks.
Hey!
Yes, come on.
Love it. I'm Miranda Kane.
And my name is Bibi Lynch.
Coming up, we're going to find out how we can find and keep our soulmates.
Oh,
I know.
My name is Brian Jory, and I teach about relationships, do research on intimacy, and counsel couples.
Hello, Brian Jory.
Brian, just call me Brian.
Oh, Brian.
It'll be fine.
Thanks. Yes. You can call me Bibi Lynch. It's not my name, but it is my safe word.
Okay, we'll call you Ms. Lynch. No.
I'm Bibi Lynch. No, I'm Bibi Lynch.
Sorry, we're deliberately confusing you.
Okay, so I'm already spinning in my head. Okay.
I guess, because you have flown in from
Atlanta,
the States,
Georgia.
Atlanta.
Yeah, I came in yesterday.
Yes. Just for us.
Just for us.
And then going back tonight.
Yeah, sure.
It's lovely.
No, I'm really going to Paris, which is really all about love.
And
sex.
Nice, Brian. Nicely done.
Because you are here to talk about love and sex with your new book, Cupid on Trial, What We Learn About Love When Loving Gets Tough. What does that mean?
It means that love is difficult for everybody. Sometimes we think, oh, we've got this great relationship, but it turns out not to be that way.
Yeah.
None of them turn out to be that way. It's really, you got to work at it. You got to put stuff into it. You got to look at yourself, take personal responsibility.
This sounds...
Learn to forgive.
What?
Sounds like hard work, doesn't
trust,
it?
Trust.
Are you drunk?
Put all the way of those hurts from the past and the baggage.
Get out.
And
who
that's
are you?
It.
What
all
you
that just
about?
To love somebody.
That sounds
and then
awful.
You got to hope they love you back.
And then what? What if they die?
Well, we all do.
Did that get dark too quickly?
Yeah. Well, you know, you're always going to lose love.
Oh, I can't.
Of course. I mean, love always leads to some sort of conclusion, unless you believe, you know, in some afterlife like some religions do. But for the most part, you know, love is temporary. And I think that's why love is different than the past. In the past, people found the right person, choose the right person, and then you settle into hibernate. We can't do that anymore. Life is too long because we live longer.
Yeah.
And so we have starter relationships, even starter marriages, and we learn from each one of them, and then we, you know, get better each time.
What's a starter marriage? What would you describe a starter relationship and a starter marriage?
Well, they all start out, you know, nobody gets married with the idea that we're going to split up. They just don't. I mean, that's been proven over and over again. But we do split up. You know, at least in America, we have a 40 to 50% divorce rate for first marriages.
Actually, I think ours is about the same, isn't
it?
Yeah. So, I mean, you have to look at the fact that you probably will learn something from this relationship, and maybe it'll go on and on. But the thing is, the 50% that stay together, and I don't want to sound jaded. I mean, I think it's great that if people can find love that makes them fulfilled. But even the 50% that stay together, I mean, they're not all, you know, roses and candy and love all the time.
And you would know because you're a relationship counselor, relationship.
Well, I'm a therapist. I do research on intimacy, and I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
I teach college students. So, and I've been doing that most of my life.
Why this subject for you?
You know, it's an interesting question, but when I was 10 years old, we got a new neighbor next door, and out in the yard, I was talking to this guy. I'm like, what do you do? He's like, I'm a psychologist. What's that? He told me, well, we help people with their problems. And I said, and you get paid for that? He's like, yeah, we get paid pretty well. 10 years old, I'm like, I want to do that.
Did you?
And I've been doing it ever since.
So
I mean,
cute.
I was in college till I was 29 years old. And then I was a doctor, and, you know, I've gone on to work with couples. I started out working with children, and that's hard because you got to work with the parents, and, you know, you're always dealing with multiples. parents, children, and grandparents, you name it. I started working with couples because I love couples. And I love the subject of love. Mm. I mean, I have experienced love in my own life. And I had, you know, really good relationships with my parents, especially my mother. So, you know, I think she was very passionate about love. And so I ended up doing it, and I've never thought twice about it. I love every
love
day.
Love, love?
When people ask me, what do you do for a living? I walk into a classroom and I talk to students about love, intimacy, sexuality, and we talk about it. I mean, sometimes my colleagues are like, Brian, do you really talk about this stuff in your classes? I'm like, yeah, we do.
What kind of things?
Well, we talk about orgasm and we talk about...
Remind me, what's...
talk to it someone about it later.
Okay. I'll Google it, Brian.
You know, how it works, how you get it. We talk about body parts, what fits, what doesn't fit where, how to say yes, how to say no. We learn about body fluids, nuts, bolts, the whole, I call it the plumbing. But we also learn about the emotions that's behind it. And fortunately for me, this past couple of years has been quite a roller coaster ride because before, you know, well, before 2018, Snoozorama, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, love, love, love. And then suddenly, you know, it's in the news all the time. So I'm getting all kinds of requests.
The Me Too thing, you mean?
Yeah, yeah, that. Yeah. And several other things, too, in America. The Netflix shows, you know, with You. Have you seen that one?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, with me.
Everybody's talking about it. And Ted Bundy tapes. Oh. Our sociopathic killer.
Yeah.
And people and women are saying, wow, he's hot.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm getting a lot of requests from people like, why do women say he's hot? Well, he is hot. I mean, he was. Yeah. Yeah. That was part of his modus operandi, so to speak, you know? I mean, he's the boy next door. Every woman was like, oh, I'd love to take him home to mom, you know, or take him for a couple of hours even. But, you know, it was the dark side.
I wish I'd been taught, well, A, anything, and B, the emotional side of it, because I have had and continue to have, and maybe now I'm trying to, and I'm seeing it's unrealistic now, but really like now, I've just always had this soulmate thing, this real idea of what love would be, and it's been totally unrealistic, and it stopped me going for it. So when you're saying that love has its, you know, a conclusion, that makes me not want to go for it.
Well, love is a scary trip, I think, but I think a soulmate's what we all want. And I don't think that is unrealistic, but I think it's unrealistic to think it's easy to be a soulmate. And you notice I say be a soulmate.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're all looking for the soulmate to come to us, but we don't really spend enough time thinking about ourselves. Like, what are we giving out? Or even before we even get into a relationship, I try to get my students to think about, well, what do you have to offer in a relationship? And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, you know, what about you?
Why you?
Do you love? What do you have to offer to someone else in love? And that's where my book starts, on page one. It's like asking the readers, hey, be reflective about yourself as you read this book. Think about, actually, I give him a question, which is, if you woke up tomorrow morning and you were suddenly turned into this person you say you love, would you want that proposition? Do you want to be them? What's it like to be in a relationship with you? And, you know, people do not think about that. Honestly, they don't. They're constantly thinking about what they're getting, but they don't think about what they're giving out. And that's really what I want the reader to do as they read through my book.
Does the book talk about how love and dating relationships has changed in terms of even 10 years ago?
It doesn't talk about it explicitly, but it shows it. It's a story-driven book. And so the stories, you know, I guess you're talking maybe about social media, the way we meet for love. It's all about dating apps now. And that is so different. And, you know, anybody that does, you do read about some people who say they swear on, you know, out online, I'm getting off the dating apps, I'm going to meet somebody, you know, over at the coffee house or at the gym or at church or some, you know, the bowling alley or something like that. Mm. That's not really realistic in 2019, because when you meet people, you don't really know where they're at in terms of wanting a relationship, whether they're gay, whether they're heterosexual. When you put a dating app together, you put your profile, it's like you're putting yourself out there. One of the things we know from studying dating profiles is people do know in the back of their mind what they want, but more than that, they know what they can get. We don't think enough about the limitations we actually have. I mean, I'm a therapist as well, so I've worked with people who have terrible problems in relationships. They have chronic illnesses, they have disabilities and conditions, they're too tall, too short.
How do you decide that someone is worth becoming the soulmate to? How much do you have to have there already?
First of all, I do think there has to be chemistry. Mm. I mean, the more we learn about genetics and hormones, you know, we have these hormones that are released in us, PEA, dopamine. Mm. That's real. So dating apps, it's only good up to a point, because you can't smell the person. And I've got, you know, you hear about this all the time. You know,
it's that generally good.
You actually are very into this person online, and you meet them, and within the first 10 minutes, it's not that they stink.
Yeah, it's just the wrong
smell. They just don't have the right smell for you.
I've had that.
Really? Or
sure. And so you've got to start with that chemistry that really kicks in. Now, as far as a soulmate goes, of course, we're all at the beginning driven by passion, lust, seeing a person and just like, oh, you know, I got to have that, yeah. You know, and that's the way it begins. Attraction through your eyes for both men and women. We sometimes think it's all about the looks for guys. No, it's about the looks for women too. And the smells. Actually, women are better at smells than men are. There are studies that show women can actually smell attractive guys. Seriously, they rate guys on their attractiveness, have them sleep in a shirt, and women rate the t-shirts, and sure enough, it correlates.
That's a focus group we should have been.
Oh. Yeah.
Were they paid? Did they get snacks, these women?
Then they get to have the guy.
I just want the shirt. I can't lie.
Of course.
Nice shirt.
Yeah, you know, the smell's good, and I can just say as a man, too, you know, you can sort of smell the right smell, and it's pheromones, you know, our bodies are giving them off. And so it's got to start with chemistry.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get to meet the person, you've got to feel comfortable with their values and the way they look at the world and the way they hold themselves, the way they interact. This is why so many people fall in love with someone at work, because in a work environment, you get to see people in different situations, your coworkers. Mm. Now, I know this does not line up with what we've been reading about in the papers, but studies show that about 60% of couples met at work. So the idea of meeting people at work doesn't line up with, we're not supposed to, you know, hit on anybody at work. I think it comes down to how you go about, you know, meeting people at work, that you're not harassing them or pushing into their space. And also, you know, you can meet somebody and break up, and then you do have problems at work sometimes from it. But the truth is, you know, you see people at work, and that's how you get to see how they hold themselves, carry themselves, talk, solve problems. I mean, it's a nice sort of experimental area where you can watch somebody. And then after that, I mean, it's, you know, as it gets deeper and you begin to see, this is a person I really feel good around, and they feel good with you. And where does that come from? You know, I don't really know. And that's one of the things I admit in my book. It's a gift. And it's in the fabric of our lives, and it's a gift that we have as human beings to be able to find that person. So the idea of a soulmate, I don't think, is unrealistic at all. Of course, then you, as you get more and more serious, you start thinking about you know, is this a person that I would want to have children with, or that I would want to, you know, be together, you know, with for 5 days, let alone 5 years or even 40 years, you know? I do think there has to be a lot of pragmatism with love. And that's one of the things I really we know from studies that the higher you score on these romantic scales, like believing that love is forever, believing that love can solve any problem.
Love completes you and fixes you. That's where I'm at. Because I'm a Piscean. Who's a good sign of Pisces?
That's actually a sign of your relationships not working out because you don't have enough practicality in your thinking. So you've got to combine those feelings and senses and passions with some amount of practicality. And practicality is what gets in the way in life very often.
And speaking of practicality, because one of the things you touched on in the book is the shame factor. And I quite like this because we do have quite a lot of discussions on the podcast, which is where we have people with different kinks and fetishes and certainly like sexual needs and intimacy and stuff like that. And it's being able to explain what you want from your partner.
Yes.
So is that something that you go into and why shame drags down intimacy?
Okay.
Tell us a bit more about.
Well, there's two ideas about this. One is put it out there right at the beginning. Mm. So that you're clear about what you want, what you're getting into, which can work, especially with online, because if you're going online, you can put it out there sort of semi-anonymously and see who's going for that and, you know, go fishing for what you need, whatever your kink is or whatever. And we all have them, by the way.
Yeah,
in fact, I would feel sorry for somebody who doesn't have some pretty passionate, kinky sex. I mean, whatever that is for them, you know.
What is it for you?
Plead the fifth, I'm gonna,
you know, that's
fifth.
For me to know
and
you
to
find
out.
You know, go online, you'll find out. So one idea is put it out there up front. Another is, you know, get to know the person because you are taking a risk with it. You're exposing your deeper side. And, you know, I personally think the greater problem is not the kinks. I believe the problem is repressing it all, holding it inside, never fulfilling it. And I think that relationships can actually get in the way of that because if you're not with the person that shares that, whatever it is, S&M, if you're a dominant person and you're with somebody who doesn't want to be a submissive person's dominated, you got a problem there.
How important is sex in relationships then? Sex and love.
Oh, I think it's critical. And I think, you know, the older you get, the less often you have sex. I mean, there are studies about this now that, you know, couples in their 20s, you know, have sex about over 50 times a year. So about once a week. When you get into your 40s, it drops down to about 40 times a year. And when you hit your 50s and 60s, it's down to maybe like 30 times a year.
And when you do a podcast about sex, it just disappears. Absolutely.
It's like, well, you know what they say, those who are doing it are just doing it, and those who aren't are talking about it.
So rub it in! Rub it in!
All right, Brian.
Fine.
All right.
How important is sex?
Tell me what it
I really believe it's essential.
Do
now,
you?
I know there, I mean, it's the sad, one of the funniest things a student ever wrote on one of my exams is, the question was, you know, what are the elements of marriage? And the answer was, one of the elements is sexual monogamy. She wrote, one of the elements of marriage is sexual monotony. Which, she had to define it. She wrote, one of the elements of marriage is sexual monotony, which means you can only have sex with one person at a time. I laughed so hard when I read that. I had to give her credit. I'm like, that's hilarious. How many do you want at a time, you know?
You think it's critical?
I absolutely believe it.
How many couples are not having sex? I know
many.
Loads of couples aren't. So how?
We're actually, as worldwide, I'm not talking about Americans or British, but worldwide, we're actually having less sex than used to be. We talk about it more. Our shows are much more sexually explicit. But when you do studies of how often people have sex, people are having sex less often.
So why is that?
Why? There are different theories about it. One of the theories is, you know, too much screen time. People are spending too much time with their face in Facebook or Instagram or whatever social media they're into. But I think it could be something better than that. I think people are probably having less unwanted sex, you know, where you're just doing it. I recently was involved in a pretty major article in America about maintenance sex. And when I first heard the term, I didn't really relate to it, maintenance sex. But it's sex you just have to keep your partner happy, which is a good thing. Honestly, I mean, if it's better than no sex whatsoever. But yeah, couples don't have an... I believe this. You know, when you get married, you have to sign a license, a marriage license. It's a license that says, well, you're not going to lie and cheat and screw around on somebody else. But what I try to tell my students is it's also a license that says you are going to have sex with this person that you're, you know.
But that means, but that's different to you have to have sex.
Yeah.
Though.
No, when right.
When
no.
When you're saying it's a good thing that you're having sex.
Right.
I just want to go back to a point where you were saying, oh, it's good that you're having sex.
Yes.
But that's good that you're having sex, not good that someone's making you feel like
you're When you do counseling, you do get in some crazy, people can be crazy. Mm. So I recently was, interviewing a woman who was furious about her husband having an affair. And yet she said, well, we haven't had sex in a long time. How long? 8 years? 10 years? I'm like, so you haven't had sex with your husband for 8 to 10 years? And were you surprised that he had an affair? Yes! I'm like, they're so irrational.
Why wasn't she wanting to have the sex?
Well, she took that romantic view. It's like, well, I didn't love him anymore.
So then
why not end the marriage?
Yeah.
You know? Kids, a mortgage, home, security.
Life is very short.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
I'm very short.
Well, you know, it did come to an end eventually.
It did.
Sure, of course. I do know many couples personally, even. They don't really have much sex. They're living like roommates.
Yeah.
And I always find that very sad because I think, like you said, life is short.
But I quite like that.
You ought to have,
you're still married. Like was it you? I was talking to. I was saying to someone that I think marriage these days is not even these days, but sometimes when you are married for a long time and it does feel like your roommates. But surely there's comfort in that, knowing that you're still with your best friends, that you're together in like that sex. There's so many different ways to get sex. We talk a lot about consensual non-monogamy and polyamory.
Yes,
and I think that is a solution to many people's problems when they're not, when they're married but they're not having sex. And I think that's something that maybe that's something we can talk a bit more openly about, and we can get more people.
Well, I think it goes on a lot more than we think it does.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, whether it's swingers or polyamorous people, I think it can mean one of two things. It could mean you're solving a problem in your relationship because one wants sex more often or wants a different kind of sex, or you're adding spice and variety. Mm. Can mean that. It can also mean this is the end of your relationship, you know, because if you don't have the friendship, see, I always say you should marry your best friend.
Yeah.
People say, no, you know, they categorize friends, lovers. Mm. I think that's crazy. I mean, I think your lover should be your best friend.
Yeah.
And we also know the more you asked about, you know, how do you find that soulmate? They're going to be somebody who's very much like yourself.
Oh, God.
We know. Brian.
Yeah. No, that's psychological proven fact. Yes. Couples who are happier when they are more like one another. I tell people, if you really want to marry somebody you're going to love, marry yourself.
Get a
of course
mirror.
You can. Yeah, no, true. No, you know, I'm not talking about egocentrism or narcissism or anything like that. But, you know, they have the same view of the world you do.
Yeah.
They have the same needs that you have, the same values.
Actually, that does make sense, doesn't it? I mean, I guess we've always kind of thought opposites attract as well.
Yes.
But also, you know, if you've got a specific fuck up, do you want that person to have the same fuck up? Do we recognise that? will it equal out your fuck up?
I don't know what I mean. Yeah, but I don't want to go around to you and your future husband's house and just be hit with a stack full of stolen sugar. Like, just sort of, you know how some people collect stacks of newspapers? In Vivi's house, in Mr. and Mrs. Lynch's house.
I don't even take sugar.
No, see? Look, she's got four packets there. Yeah. She's going to nick them. They're going to be in her handbag.
Brian, I'm going to ask you something really sensible.
But what wouldn't it be nice? Seriously, wouldn't it be nice for your fuck up to have the same fuck up?
I guess, but then we'll both be fucked up.
Yeah.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Oh, my God, is brilliant. This is like a breakthrough.
I really don't see anything.
Because I've always thought.
Because if, I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off, but I mean, if you've got a fuck up and you fuck up.
Yeah.
And they don't, what are you going to do? You're going to hear about it.
Well, see, I was thinking of marrying a therapist. What do you think?
Pardon?
Pardon? Don't pretend you didn't hear that, Brian. I was always thinking maybe I should marry a therapist or a hairdresser. But because I thought a therapist could, like, fix me. And then I thought I would kill them because they would analyze everything and I would, and you know, anyway.
Exactly.
Not about me. What were you going to say? What were you going to ask?
I quite like, there's something else that you, crucial questions we all need to ask ourselves every day in order to maintain a meaningful relationship.
Oh,
so just as a little bit of a take home, what kind of questions, what kind of things should we be asking ourselves? What kind of things can we do to maintain a meaningful relationship? So say we found our soulmate.
Yeah.
Say that he does put up with us stealing loads of sugar.
Sure.
And he's possibly got diabetes by now. What kind of things can we do to maintain a meaningful relationship?
Well, I think you've got to ask yourself, what kind of person are you? What are you giving off? I've already covered that. But I also think you've got to ask yourself, are you treating them like a mistake? People make mistakes. Forgiveness is a huge part of long-term intimacy, which goes back to your fuck-up thing. It's like, we judge our partner for things that we do ourselves. And we've got to learn to let the past go. You know, whatever has happened, the disappointments or whatever, every day is a new day. So I think every day we have to ask ourselves, you know, how do I stay focused on the present? Too many couples are carrying too many grudges about the past. And I think you've got to let those grudges go because your partner may make a mistake, but it doesn't mean they are a mistake. And I think that's one of our cultural problems right now. We think if this person isn't perfect, get rid of them. Get rid of them. You know, go move on to the next person. Of course, what you find is the next person's not perfect either.
Yeah.
So forgiveness is a pretty huge part of it. And I also think, you know, honesty is a huge part. Now, this goes back to what you're talking about. We talked about a lot of things, the kinks. Can you really be honest with someone you love about what you want and what you need now? And are you going to allow them to be honest, your partner? Yeah. There's just too much deception in most relationships. In fact, dating relationships are among the most dishonest relationships there are. We start out, we want to put our best foot forward, but at some point, you know, when is putting your best foot forward being a phony and being dishonest about who you really are? Mm-hmm. Now, and the dating apps really help that along because, you know, you can present yourself as this perfect profile of a person and all that, and maybe even using your perfect angle shots and all this stuff. But honesty is so essential, and it is so, so hard.
I like to be honest to people, but I don't need to hear the honest stuff about me. and if they know me well enough, if the soulmate knows, he knows not to do that.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know something? It's about being honest with yourself, about yourself. So, we do have a lot of judgment of our partner, being honest with our partner, but it's not really honesty because what it is it's judgment. And when you are judging your partner, you're saying a lot more about yourself, you know, and your expectations. This goes back to what you said about how do you maintain it. I mean, we have to ask ourselves every day, how much of our problems are my expectations? If you got to let your expectations go and let this person be free to be who they are. When you put expectations on this. You're putting them in a cage. You're putting a tying
so
them up a little
brilliant.
Bit.
When do you say no, though? When are they not the right person to even try to be a soulmate to?
Well, I think when you just feel bad about yourself. I'm a big believer in loving yourself. And loving yourself means you know who you are. And I like to put it this way. Loving yourself means you know you were born for a reason. You're not a mistake. You're not an accident. You have meaning and purpose. You're making your life count. When that person's taking that away from you, that's who you are. That's who we all are. It's like, what are our passions and our goals and why are we here? When that person's taking it away from you, and whether it's grabbing it and, sleeping with your sister and throwing it in your face or whatever.
Oh my God,
or whether
Ron,
they're just
not that example,
day by
that
day bleeding you, seeping off your energy with negativity, with these toxic statements, trying to put ideas in your head about who you are. Mm. You can't ever let yourself go. I think anybody who lets themselves go for a relationship, and many people do this, that's not a good thing.
We're not talking about like putting on a couple of extra pounds.
No,
here.
No.
Just
No. Like, yeah.
Suppressing yourself.
Yeah. I'm talking about, when you give yourself over completely to another person and let them mind fuck you.
Yeah.
If you found yourself, do you think you've learned a few more things about keeping one?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. What I thought was really interesting when Brian was saying about you kind of find you. And I always, actually, when I was a kid, kind of thought, I kind of want the male me.
Mm.
But it was like, because I know I'm straddling bonkers and I kind of like that. But then I was like, no, you have to be fixed yourself before you find someone, because I don't want someone to complete me.
Yeah.
I am aware I'm sounding like a friend script. But do you know what I mean? And now I like what Brian was saying, which is, you can both be fucked up.
Yeah.
I kind of like that, because we kind of are.
Yeah.
I'm not going to not be fucked up.
And no one's perfect. No one's, like, the absolute... I mean, what even is unfucked up anyway?
I don't know, but it upset me a bit when Brian said that love has a conclusion.
Mm.
Oh. I'm honestly too delicate for this world.
You're too delicate for this podcast.
Totally too educated for this podcast. My name is Professor Bibi Lynch.
And I'm the scum that is Miranda Kane.
Good Sex, Bad Sex was produced by Sam Bonham for metro.co.uk.
Not that you know it. Get in touch with us on Twitter at Good Sex, Bad Sex.
With three X's,
because someone thinks he's funny.
And also, if you've got any sexy question, what is a sexy question? Bra size?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Send nudes.
Send nudes and cake. Get in touch. info@sexpod.co.uk. I wish we had a fax. still think faxing's magic.
Oh, well, I'm going to see you next week. Bibi will see you in 1983.
God bless.